Today's students face a challenging paradox. The digital tools they need to complete their work are often the source of their biggest distractions. Students can quickly become overwhelmed trying to manage the daily confluence of online interactions with schoolwork, extracurricular activities, and family life. Author and educator Anna Homayoun has written the new book, Social Media Wellness, which looks to decode the new language of social media for parents and educators and provide solutions to help students. Again, the name of the book is Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. And we welcome Anna Homayoun to the roundtable this morning. Anna, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Wonderful to have you. Give us a sense of what brought you of wanting to address the topic.
Sure. So about 16 years ago, I started working with teens and young adults in the heart of the Silicon Valley on organization, time management, and personal purpose. And when I started, kids would come into my office and they would tell me that their biggest distractions were food, their siblings, pets, daydreaming. And then about a decade ago, I noticed a shift in what their distractions were. You know, more and more kids were distracted by what they were doing online, and they really didn't have a way to navigate, you know, their online and their in real life world. And then I found that over the last 5 years, more and more schools have brought technology into the classroom. And there are a lot of benefits to that. But at the same time, there's this new paradox that kids find that the number one thing they need to use to complete their work is also their distraction from completing that work. And so the biggest issue that I found was we don't have the right tools to have conversations with kids around social media and technology use. You know, a lot of the conversation so far has been around, you know, fear, anger, frustration, you know, why are you using this? And I really knew that we needed to change the conversation so that we can get kids to be intrinsically motivated to make better choices online and in real life.
Let me just ask you about the subtitle of the book of Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. How do you see that world as unbalanced?
Well, there's a couple things I talk about in the book, right? So this concept of there's so much information coming at us as adults, right? You look at your phone and you get all these notifications. We don't realize that kids sometimes get all those notifications as well, or different ones based on what they're subscribed to, and how that stream of content can really affect their day-to-day ability to process information. But the other two things that really happen is the amplified expectations that happen when you go online and you look at what people are doing and you compare that highlight reel to your own reality. For kids particularly who are in that developmental phase of really wanting to be liked and wanting to people to like them, there's this all about the likes mentality that's developed in terms of personal values. And that means that, you know, likes and loves and followers and comments are the new barometer of popularity. So it's created this unbalanced digital world for many of us. And it's especially important for teens and tweens who are in their formative years for us to have these conversations with them. But a lot of times, adults don't know how to have the conversation because they've never had their own experiences around being a teen and being on social media.
Is there anything, and I thought about this while reading the book, is there anything that we can even compare it to in previous generations that was as much as a, for want of a better word, distraction than what social media is?
Well, I think it's important to recognize, and that's part of the argument I make in the book, is every generation has something. You bring up a great point, right? It could have been television. It could have been, you know, whatever people right. thought kids were doing before. The challenge and uniqueness of this world is that you didn't necessarily need to watch television to complete your homework. You could for an assignment or something. But for every day, this is part of their world. So we have to understand the language of social media socialization, not just about social media, but also about all technology, which is what I talk about in the book, and give kids a framework to start to build healthier habits. So that's really what I talk about. You know, the first three chapters of the book are foundational, what you need to know as parents or educators. But the rest of the book is really, here are solutions on how you talk to your kids, strategies that work, and sort of a model that you can take what works for you and leave the rest.
You talk in the book about focusing and prioritizing. So how do we prioritize? How do we decide? Because that is obviously a way of focusing. So in that prioritization, what are we doing to be able to focus ourselves so that there is more of a balance?
Well, one of the things that I do that's a little bit unique, and I talked about it in my last book, The Myth of the Perfect Girl, is all around helping kids build their own blueprint for success. And so my way of motivating kids to prioritize is A, make it all about them and what they want. So yesterday I spoke at an all-girls school in Nashville, and I started the talk with a very simple question. How many of you would like 7 to 10 hours of free time per day? And everyone, you know, hands raised. And so what then I did was I used that lens to help them understand, you know, identify what your values are. Think about what you're doing to move you towards those values and away from those values. What are those daily habits? And when you can identify your values, which I don't think we ask kids to identify their values anymore. I think we tell kids or tell adults what they should value. But when you have kids critically think about what's important to them and whether or not their daily behavioral choices are moving them towards that or away from that, they actually go home. And this is what happened last night. We had a number of parents come to the parents event that night and said, A, my child came home and told me that I had to go see you speak, and B, they already are putting in place some of the things you told them around prioritization and compartmentalization because they saw what was in it for them, right? I wasn't telling them to do it for me, for getting into college. So the prioritization really comes from identifying what your values are and then identifying what your daily habits are related to those values. So that's some of the stuff I talk about in the book.
Where does peer pressure come into this? Because you can prioritize all you want, but if everyone else around you is doing something else, it makes it that much more difficult, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I visit schools around the country, and I always tell parents, what kids are on doesn't just vary by school or location, right? It varies by grade level. And so the peer pressure that goes on is really what is the big driving factor for a lot of teens. But the piece that we sort of don't give teens credit for is that when you help them build their own blueprint, and a term I use in the book is figure out your why. Why are you doing this? Why are you picking up your phone? Why are you sharing this? What is your motive for yourself? Kids actually start to step back. We see this all the time in my office. And they start to say, well, you know, that's actually not important to me. I'm going to opt out. We have kids who delete apps off their phones because of that. I want to opt out. I want to filter this out of my life. I know what I want to filter in, and I know what I want to filter out. But the key is really stepping them out of the zone of peer pressure to allow them to reflect so that when they go back in, they have tools to navigate that world.
When you do the talk for parents, obviously it has had to deal with their children in this issue, but there also has to be a lot of education for them as well, right? Because a lot of them are using social media, but maybe not in the best ways, at least in terms of the message you're trying to get across to their children.
Absolutely. And this is particularly interesting time to be talking about social media. One of the things that I always see with parents, you know, last night I was speaking with some parents after the parent talk, and they said, well, this also means that I have to change my habits. And they recognize that, right? Because one of the things I talk about in the book is this mixed message. If you're telling kids to not be online, what are you doing to send that message of compartmentalization and effective self-regulation? And so it causes them to reflect. And my whole concept is coming from a place of compassion and understanding that we're all new at this. You know, social media has changed so much over the last decade that everything and all the, you know, strategies of dealing with it and communicating are new to us. So we all have to sort of be in it together. And that's what I talk about with parents is how do you build that you know, village that helps you raise the child, not just in real life, but also online.
How have the schools responded? Have you found, as you go into schools and talk to the kids and talk to the parents, that they get it, that they understand it, that there is more of an awareness?
Oh, I can't even begin to say what a positive, you know, feedback I've gotten on this book tour. It is unbelievable, beyond my expectations. Last week in Charlotte, I had a sixth grade boy who went home to his mother. The mother showed up at the event, and she said, he went home and he said, we need to do these things so I cannot be distracted. You need to go see this lady speak. She gets me. And then, you know, with the parents, it's really educating them about what is going on in the current landscape. And they're so receptive. You know, last night I had a bunch of parents come up to me afterwards and be like, I learned about 15 new things, and I thought I knew stuff, right? Because I go beyond the everyday to not just give them sort of the landscape overview, but also what they need to do. But the thing that I do, you know, to really change the conversation, which is why I wrote this book, is when I go into a school, I'll give the school a survey that they can give students ahead of time so they can see what the landscape is at their current school. And then afterwards, we give them a curriculum around advisory so that they can continue the conversation. But, you know, yesterday I had 800 girls, and many of them went home. We got the feedback from parents who showed up at the event and said, my daughter said I had to come. So that's always good, amazing, right? You know, teens are not going to say stuff like that if they weren't affected. And it really, it's because I make it all about them. I say it's not about me or your teachers or your parents. What are you doing online that's energizing for you but also draining? And how can you change your behaviors so you maximize your own wellness and productivity?
But I'm going to hold you to the question, which is about the schools themselves. You were talking about taking a survey to get the landscape of the school. Is that landscape somewhat universal, or are schools very much struggling with this as well?
Oh, so back to your point about the school, let me make sure I address that. The schools are incredibly supportive and grateful because the way that I deliver the message is in parallel with what they are trying to instill in terms of values for their students and in terms of ideas. And so they're struggling with the concept that, you know, kids obviously have this ultimate paradox, and they have to use the same tools to get their work done that can provide this distraction. And what can schools do to help educate the child around sort of the three S's that I talk about in the book: healthy socialization, effective self-regulation, and overall safety. So at different schools, we see different things. Like, you know, some schools have 77% of their kids keep their phone in their bedroom at night. And, you know, that's one of the things I talk about. You know, kids tell me consistently that they wake up in the middle of the night if they get a notification, or they're up way past when they were planning on going to sleep because they were messaging someone. So that's part of the self-regulation and the regulation that I help parents understand about how they have to be part of the process. So it's really a three-pronged solution, right? When I go into schools, I talk to faculty and staff, I talk to students, and I also talk to parents. But we also have this before and after so that people continue this conversation, because it's not just a one-time thing. This is an ongoing thing that schools are dealing with every day, really.
The name of the book, Social Media Wellness. Anna, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. Best of luck, and thank you for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you so much.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the new book is Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. Anna Homayoun is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.